With the passage of Frodo, Bilbo, and Gandalf from the Grey Havens, Middle-earth's Third Age comes to an end. Yet what ultimately became of Sam, Merry, Pippin, and the rest of the Fellowship? How did the Shire benefit from the great sacrifice and heroism of its famed sons? Join us as we explore the fate of the Fellowship during Middle-earth's Fourth Age. The Tolkien Road, Episode 210, The Lord of the Rings, History of the Third Age, Part 8. Hello everyone, welcome to the Tolkien Road, Episode 210. On this episode, we'll be concluding our series on the history of the Third Age as we look at key events from the years after the conclusion of The Lord of the Rings, even going a bit into the Fourth Age.
Exciting.
Yeah. So, 3,000 plus years of history and 8 episodes of a podcast. That's cramming a lot of events in there.
That's what I would call epic.
Yeah.
For sure.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
This is the epicest podcast.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's high praise. So, John, how are you doing?
I am doing pretty well, Greta. How are you
good.
Doing?
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah, I'm really good.
Rock and roll. Yeah, you know who else is doing really well? All of our patrons.
Oh, yeah.
They are amazing. They're all amazing people.
They are totally. Yep.
They are riding high in life, and they have our sincere appreciation and gratitude. And we want to give a shout out to them. And we want to give a shout out to our to a recently boosted pledging patron, Ms. Anonymous. Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Anonymous.
That's right. Thank you so much. And you know, we encourage all of you who are listening to become a patron, right? Support us on Patreon. Becoming a patron lets you support the show in a tangible way and lands you some awesome perks, like early access to new episodes and more. Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out the deets. And if you're unable to support us via Patreon, there's always TipJar, and you can subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us.
Please.
All right.
Yes.
So still kind of slow in the world of Tolkien news, but there was this little snippet today. So I guess that I saw today as I record this. This was found via the website Geek Tyrant, which is where I get all my geeky news, right? So a good website, highly recommend it. It's the place I go to normally for all my, you know, I got like my, you know, my sports website I go to, right? I got my, you know, other websites I go to for things that matter to me. And then I got my Geek News website, and Geek Tyrant's the one. But anyway, Geek Tyrant had an article, and they linked to an interview given by the actress Morfydd Clark. And Morfydd Clark is the actress who I think it's confirmed is going to be playing Galadriel in the Lord of the Rings on Prime TV show. The Latron Prime TV show. So here's the big news that Morfydd shared with the world. Yeah. Lady Galadriel had this to say. I feel like I've got my fix of the massive stuff by doing Lord of the Rings. The amount of people working on this show is continually mind-blowing. One guy's job consists just of seeing how dust reacts to footsteps and breath. That would never have even crossed my mind before. Other than something like Marvel, I don't think things could get much bigger than this.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Mind-blowing scale. You know, that's the takeaway.
I mean, if it's getting compared to Marvel, I'm down with that.
Yeah, well,
as far as the scale goes.
The scale goes, yeah.
Yeah.
I do hope it has that, the magic of the Lord of the Rings films in terms of, like, kind of the scenery and everything. That's,
sure.
You know, that's,
oh, yeah.
To me, that's a very important thing.
Do we know anything about where they're filming?
Well, yeah, New Zealand.
They are definitely, they're filming the show in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there are maybe some other places as well, but certainly in New Zealand. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not really news. It's not the newsiest of news, but it's
something.
It's something.
Yeah.
You know, something to tide us over It's like, come on, come on, give us something, right? I thought they supposedly had like the first two episodes wrapped up, but anyway.
Well, you know, everything is so up in the air these days. Time is just not what it used to be.
Stupid pandemic.
Oh, I heard it's actually not a pandemic anymore.
Oh.
Well,
are we turning this into a coronavirus update podcast?
No, we're not
turning
it into a, I just thought of it because the...
Let's be careful before we wade into any waters.
I know. I'm not going to comment on it. I'm just going to... All I'm going to say is that our son's guitar teacher told me today that the CDC is no longer referring to it as a pandemic. That's all I'm going to say.
You heard it there, people. Greta is a coronavirus denier.
Well, you know, also the source is our son's, you know, awesome guitar teacher. So,
Greta.
Yes, sir.
I thought I knew you.
Yep. Well, guess you were wrong.
Well, all right. Well, moving on.
Okay.
Yeah. So, if you have any tips on Lord of the Rings news, especially Latron Prime news, send them our way.
Yes. We want to know all the things about Latron Prime.
And then stick around for some correspondence at the end of the episode.
Always fun to do correspondence.
All right, Greta, you ready to conclude our series on the Third Age?
Wow. It feels a bit like, what is the right word? Like we're reaching a milestone or something.
I think the right word is conclusion.
A conclusion.
Yes.
We're a wrap. We're about to wrap things up.
It has been quite a journey.
It has been. Mm-hmm. It has been. It feels, it's funny, actually. I thought it was over, but... that I learned there was more.
Well, you know, it's like it's like the bad guy in a scary movie, right? You know, just when you think he's dead,
he comes back
for that one last gasp,
like
right?
Loki.
So, yeah. So the reason we're doing this is this last episode is because there is a you know, a significant chunk of history that happens after the end of Lord of the Rings, right?
Yes.
So, what's the official event that ends Lord of the Rings, Greta, in your mind? What do you remember? What it is? It's not in your mind. It's what actually is the last event in Lord of the Rings. Do you remember? In like the actual story, in like the actual content of the book.
No, see, this is where I'm going to get the movie confused with the book.
Go ahead.
Okay. It must have been. It must have been Frodo returning to the Shire.
Nope.
Oh, darn it.
No, where does Frodo go?
Well, he goes to the Grey Havens.
Yeah, right.
But is that the actual last thing in the book?
No, that's not the last thing in the book.
I was
going to
say.
It's almost the last thing in the book, but it's not the last thing in the book.
Something with Sam.
Yeah. Sam returns home.
Sam returns home to the Shire. Yes.
And he says to Rose. And he says, what does he say?
I don't remember.
He says, well, I'm back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he says it to Rosie.
Right. Yeah, make sure I got those words.
He went all Terminator on us.
No, the Terminator says, I'll be back.
Oh, close enough.
I'll be back.
Okay, so I was, because I read the timeline, and anyway, I must have gotten confused, because I felt like they mentioned Frodo going to the Grey Havens in the timeline.
Well, they do. They do. And so that's kind of the point I was trying to make as I fumble through with my iPad here trying to get to the right place. Here we go. Yeah. So we're actually going to start before the end of The Lord of the Rings, though, because there's some interesting things that happen that don't really... They get talked about a little bit in the book, but they're kind of on the peripheries of the main action. And so before we dive into really what is the Fourth Age and the events of the Fourth Age from the timeline, we're going to talk about the war in the north, right? So the idea here is that as the War of the Ring is going on in Return of the King, right, that you've got the Gondor front of the war, right? Which is where we think of all the action,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got up north in the lands where, first of all, in the lands near Lorien, right, where Galadriel lives, and in the lands where The Hobbit took place, right, there are other battles going on, right?
Right, yes.
So Sauron was basically had all these different things going on in different places. He had opened multiple battle fronts, and so we're going to talk about some of those events from the War in the North. So the first big thing is that Lorien is assailed, right? So if we're starting, it says after the fall of the Dark Tower, and so this is there's a couple of paragraphs before the year 3019, Shire Reckoning 1419, and that's what I'm going to be reading from here. After the fall of the Dark Tower and the passing of Sauron, the shadow was lifted from the hearts of all who opposed him, but fear and despair fell upon his servants and allies. Three times Lorien had been assailed from Dol Guldur, but besides the valor of the elven people of the land, the power that dwelt there was too great for any to overcome unless Sauron had come there himself. Though grievous harm was done to the fair woods on the borders, the assaults were driven back, and when the shadow passed, Celeborn came forth and led the host of Lorien over Anduin in many boats. They took Dol Guldur, and Galadriel threw down its walls and laid bare its pits, and the forest was cleansed. In the north also there had been war and evil. The realm of Thranduil was invaded, and there was long battle under the trees and great ruin of fire. But in the end Thranduil had the victory, and on the day of the new year of the elves, Celeborn and Thranduil met in the midst of the forest, and they renamed Mirkwood Eren Lasgalen, the Wood of Green Leaves. Thranduil took all the northern regions as far as the mountains that rise in the forest for his realm, and Celeborn took all the southern wood below the narrows and named it East Lorien. All the wide forest between was given to the Beornings and the woodmen. But after the passing of Galadriel in a few years, Celeborn grew weary of his realm and went to Imladris to dwell with the sons of Elrond. In the Greenwood, the Sylvan Elves remained untroubled, but in Lorien there lingered sadly only a few of its former people, and there was no longer light or song in Caras Galathon. So, anyway, the big takeaways here are that that basically the forces of Celeborn, right, who is he's leading the charge, Celeborn being Galadriel's husband,
right,
yep. Leading the charge, mm-hmm. In like kind of the southern part of the Mirkwood area. Right, I'll pull up my little background map here on my monitor for you, Greta, so you can see this.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So, right, we've got. You know, we've got Lorien right here, mm-hmm. and then you've got Mirkwood right here. You got the Lonely Mountain right there. So basically, and then Dol Guldur right here, right? So Lorien is attacked kind of over here, right? And then they have to come out here and attack the forces of Sauron, like counterattack the forces of Sauron, right?
Yes.
On this region east of the Anduin River here. Okay.
Gotcha.
And then up here, remember, is Thranduil's realm, right? The king of... the king of the forest, right, from The Hobbit, who is Legolas's father, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes. Okay.
So Thranduil and Celeborn team up here to take on really the forces of Sauron's forces around from Dol Guldur.
And they are ultimately victorious.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and we just need to shout out to Galadriel, who mm-hmm. threw down
I know
the walls and laid bare the pits of Dol Guldur.
It's like, couldn't we have gotten that in Lord of the Rings?
I would have loved to have seen that.
That would have been pretty epic,
that
right?
That would have been amazing.
You know, elsewhere in Middle Earth, right. Galadriel walks up and like, you know, like tears down Dol Guldur with her amazingness.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where is that line again?
It's at the end of that first paragraph.
Yeah, says, yeah. And Galadriel threw down its walls and laid bare its pits. I mean... That's just something you want to see right there. Come
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. It's like a harrowing of hell kind of like image.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. For those that don't know what that means, the harrowing of hell is it's a little bit of a, for a lot of Christians, it's actually a pretty arcane idea that when Christ on Holy Saturday between Good Friday and Easter Sunday, right, the day of the resurrection, on Holy Saturday, Christ ascended to the realm of the dead and basically woke everybody up and opened the gates of paradise, right? So all these people who were like, you know, basically prisoners of darkness, you know,
were set free,
mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And it all, you know what it also reminded me of?
Hmm.
It reminded me of Luthien when she defeats Sauron in the story of Beren and Luthien from the Silmarillion, because she like, you know, she like sings her song of power and, you know, all the, like the dungeon like comes,
yes,
you know,
it bursts,
comes open
yes,
and
yes.
all these people come out and everything. So mm-hmm. it reminded me a little bit of that. It seemed to allude to that a little bit.
Yeah, that totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, That's pretty epic. Continuing on, do you want to read this next part at the same time?
Sure. At the same time as the great armies besieged Minas Tirith, a host of the allies of Sauron that had long threatened the borders of King Brand crossed the river Carnon, and Brand was driven back to Dale. There he had the aid of the dwarves of Erebor, and there was a great battle at the mountain's feet. It lasted 3 days, but in the end both King Brand and King Dane Ironfoot were slain, and the Easterlings had the victory. But they could not take the gate, and many, both dwarves and men, took refuge in Erebor, and there withstood a siege. When news came of the great victories in the south, then Sauron's northern army was filled with dismay, and the besieged came forth and routed them, and the remnant fled into the east and troubled Dale no more. Then Bard the Second, Brand's son, became king in Dale, and Thorin the Third, Stonehelm, Dane's son, became king under the mountain. They sent their ambassadors to the crowning of King Elisar, and their realms remained ever after, as long as they lasted, in friendship with Gondor, and they were under the crown and protection of the King of the West.
Yeah, so some neat stuff there. You know, we're all accustomed to thinking of the Battle of the Five Armies from The Hobbit as, you know, being this great battle around Erebor, but there's actually another battle at, in the time of the War of the Ring at Erebor, right, that we hear described here. So Brand, King Brand would have been the grandson of Bard the Bowman, right, that kills Smaug.
Okay.
And then I think Bane was his son, and then Brand would have been Bane's son. So I believe that's the right genealogy there. And then, so Brand and then King Dine, right, Ironfoot, team up and defeat Sauron's army there in the north. So again, that's like, right, you know, if we're looking at the map again here, Greta, there's Erebor right there. So that battle's taking place like right here, right? So you have a battle here, you know, kind of in this region, and then you have another battle here. So Sauron was really, he had armies that came over here, and then he had armies that came up here.
Gotcha.
Right. So he was really trying to pour it on, and you know, if things had fallen apart here, you know, there's a good chance that maybe all of the rest of those armies would have spilled out into the rest of Middle Earth here. So things could have gotten ugly.
So this says that the Easterlings had the victory. Who were the East? Weren't they the bad guys?
So the Easterlings had the victory at that battle, but they couldn't take the gate, right, of Erebor, right? So the gate of the mountain, right? So they couldn't get into the mountain. So it sounds like the dwarves and the men went into siege, and yeah, so it says they withstood a siege, right? So a siege means that they were inside like a fortress.
Gotcha.
And so the Easterlings, it was looking pretty bad, but finally, you know, the siege defeated them, and when news came of the great, well, the siege withstood them, and then when the news came of the victory in the south, then they were like, uh-oh, we're in trouble, and they
so
left.
They left them alone, and they were able to come out
exactly
of the mountain. Gotcha. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. Cool. So yeah, that's pretty cool. So just some interesting little stuff that happens at the end of Lord of the Rings, at the end of the War of the Ring, and I thought it was worth mentioning here because it doesn't get a lot of, you know, it is mentioned actually in the story, but you don't get a lot of detail, and it can kind of feel like it's in passing with all the other stuff that's going on.
Right. So all that was happening while, like, at the end of the story that we know as of Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay. All happening simultaneously in Middle Earth.
Simultaneously.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Cool.
So now we're going to jump forward to... we're going to jump forward to the Fourth Age, to Shire Reckoning 1422. The Third Age ends precisely on October 6th, 3021, with Sam's return to Bag End. So at the moment, Sam says, "Well, I'm back." Then you hear like a voice in the background being like, "The Fourth Age has begun." Right?
And so ends the Third Age.
And thus ends the Third Age. Mm. Yes. And the Fourth Age begins.
Okay.
Yeah.
My sound effects are job.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was working on that. Yeah.
By the way, speaking of dates, I think we missed Hobbit Day.
Yeah, you know me, people.
I think it was yesterday.
I'm not very good on all that. On all that stuff. I mean, it's cool and everything, but it's just...
Well, it is cool. And we could have at least, like, had a beer and a smoke or something to celebrate.
Well, I had a beer last night. And I had a smoke the other day.
Wait, what is... Oh, it was... Yep. Okay. Well, we'll just blame all of our children's activities, keeping us too busy to... I was not able to make Lembas, sadly.
Well, yes. You know, that's... All that stuff is your... Keep me honest on the Hobbit Day stuff, because it'll just fly by me.
It slipped my mind, too. Like, I even looked it up specifically.
I have trouble remembering the birthday, my own birthday and the birthdays of my wife and children. Why would I be good at remembering Hobbit Day, you know?
I'm not saying that you weren't. I think I'm just more expressing a frustration with myself.
Yeah.
Because I did. I purposely looked it up, like, a couple weeks ago, because I somehow always get the date wrong.
What somebody needs to do is they need to make me a Hobbit liturgical calendar. And, you know, then I'll remember to
put all the important dates, not like Bilbo's birthday. Well, that is Hobbit Day. It's Bilbo's birthday.
There needs to be, somebody is falling down on this. They need to create a Tolkien liturgical calendar and publish it for the benefit of the Tolkien community so that we can all be on the same page as far as all the different relevant days of celebration.
Really good at that. Do you know who'd be really good at that?
Caitlin?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, we need it. Caitlin, if you're listening,
please
you need
get
to get
on
that. Yeah. Right? Like, that's... You were born for that.
You know what? I was actually, and that's what made me look it up, because I was looking at her Instagram and I saw like one of her recipes for Lembas, and I saw that she had a gluten-free version. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm totally going to do that this year. When is Hobbit Day? And I just, it sailed past me.
This needs to happen. I mean, there's so many, like there needs to be a Tolkien liturgical calendar that commemorates like important feast days within the Tolkienian calendar year.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
I mean, there's so many great events that happen. Like, we need to have, like, feasts and solemnities and memorials.
Hobbit Day would definitely be a solemnity.
There needs to be, like, a table that determines, like, which days supersede other days and, you know, which feasts supersede others, you know, like, you know, because you might run into something where it's like, you know, who's more important? I mean, Faramir or, you know, Éomer. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, who wants to make that decision? Well, somebody has to make that
decision.
Somebody
has to make that decision.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yep. I mean, we can advise, but...
We'd be happy to be a sounding board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But we need you to create that, Caitlin, please. Please and thank you.
You were born for this.
Indeed.
You were, that's why you're here.
Right. One of the many reasons.
Absolutely. All right. So, yes, Fourth Age, Shire Reckoning. So the Fourth Age, it corresponds with the beginning of the Fourth Age corresponds with the year 1422 on the Shire calendar, right? So the Shire has its own like set of years. So 1422 is the first year of the First Age, which means that the first year of the Shire Reckoning would have been, let's see if I can do the math, 2999. So it would have been like 1599, I believe, of the Third Age would have been the first year of the Shire Reckoning.
I have no idea how you got that, but I'm just going to take your word
for it. Just subtract 1422 from 3021.
Okay.
I'll do the math here.
Well, I don't know where 3021 came from. Where did 3021 come from?
That's the day that Sam returns, right? It says here...
are we dealing with two different calendars here? Is that the issue?
With the beginning of this year, the Fourth Age began in the count of years in the Shire, but the numbers of the years of Shire Reckoning were continued. And it says, Samwise returns to Bag End, October 6th. And
okay, so I did find that confusing. So here it says 3021, but then Shire Reckoning, 1421.
Right.
So I guess I don't understand. It's probably a moot point that we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on, but I guess I don't understand. Oh, maybe I get it. So the 3021 has to do with what age?
Well, think of it this way, right? You know, the Jews have a calendar that's like their religious calendar, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like it basically reckons the year based on I think it would go like, you know, I'm not sure when their first year would be on that calendar, but it kind of reckons the year according to a certain number. So they have a certain year. I think Muslims have a certain calendar they use based on like I don't know, the birth of Muhammad or something like that. But I don't mean to be disrespectful. I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure what it is, but it has something to do. So basically different, different groups of people can have different, can say it's a different year according to their reckoning, how they reckon, you know, how they speak of it being different years.
Okay. Right? So 1422, that's just how the Shire folk reckon the years.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, they just have their own, you know, their own calendar for their own purposes. So,
okay. Gotcha.
So yeah, this is the fourth age, 1422. So, nothing much to say about that other than it is the first year, but then we pop forward to 1427 and Will Whitfoot resigns. Sam is elected mayor of the Shire, right? So Sam, Will Whitfoot was the mayor of the Shire. We meet him in Lord of the Rings.
And he took over for Frodo, right?
No. No, Frodo, I believe, was the deputy mayor at one point.
Mm-mm. It says Frodo resigns office of mayor and Will Whitford is restored.
Okay. Well,
that happened on Midyear's Day.
Let's just look at this because I read something that said something a little different. So Will Whitfoot was the mayor of Michael Delving during the War of the Ring. An old and fat hobbit, he was largely regarded as a harmless figure of fun, but showed his mettle when in Third Age 3019, he was one of the few hobbits that protested Lotho Sackville-Baggins's takeover of the Shire on behalf of Saruman, and in return was imprisoned in the lock holes by Lotho's ruffians. He was released following the scouring of the Shire, and Frodo Baggins acted as his deputy until he had recovered.
So he was basically like a mayor.
Maybe Frodo was the acting mayor.
The acting mayor. Okay.
You know,
That makes sense. Because it does say that Will Whitford is restored.
Yeah.
Not elected.
So. I don't know that Frodo was ever the elected mayor. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's see. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I don't think he was ever like the elected mayor. I think he just served, or maybe he was just elected temporarily to serve in that capacity. Because the mayor was a 7-year election, right? It was a 7-year office. So, and as we're going to see, Sam ends up serving as mayor several times
for a long time. Yes.
So Sam is elected mayor for the first time in 1427, which would be fourth age, year 6. Pippin marries Diamond of Longcleeve. King Alaesar issues an edict that men are not to enter the Shire, and he makes it a free land under the protection of the Northern Scepter, right? So, at this point...
And that's Aragorn, yes?
Aragorn, yeah. Yes. Alaesar, yeah. That's his kingly name, right. Alaesar.
So, why is that a big deal?
What?
Like, why that men are not to enter the Shire? So, it's just like a veil of protection, basically?
Yeah, I think if you recall in Scouring the Shire, like, first of all, men obviously have a natural advantage over hobbits because of their size. Right?
Yes. Okay.
And I think there was a, you know, during the Scouring of the Shire, there were men in the Shire who, you know, who were bad guys, right? Mm-hmm. And took advantage of the Shire in some pretty awful ways. So, yeah, that would be my understanding of why he issues that edict.
That makes sense.
And then 1430, which is fourth age, year 9, Peregrine's son Faramir is born. So Peregrine names his first son Faramir in honor of Faramir, obviously.
Cool. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. So 1 year later, Sam's daughter Goldilocks is born. Of course, Sam already has a daughter at this point. Sam, I think he may already have
Eleanor.
Two kids. Yeah, he has Eleanor, and I think he has a son too, doesn't he? Or does he not? I can't remember.
Can't remember.
Let's see here. Let's see if we can find a family tree for Sam. So there's and then Frodo. Frodo would be, he was the second child and eldest of Samwise. Oh, he named him Frodo. How sweet. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's Frodo. It's Eleanor, Frodo, and Goldilocks.
Goldilocks.
Yes. I just love that he names one of his daughters Goldilocks. Like, that is the most Sam thing possible.
It absolutely is. Yeah. Well, it's just funny that he has Eleanor, which is, you know, and I think she's even known as Eleanor the Fair, right?
Right.
I mean, it sounds like a princess name, right? And then you, and like Elvish almost, and then you get Goldilocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah, that's, it's just the most... It's the most Samish thing.
It's classic
possible.
Sam.
Classic Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Classic Sam. All right. Fourth Age 11, Shire Reckoning 1432, Mary the Magnificent, Mariadoc the Magnificent becomes master of Buckland, right? Mm-hmm. So Buckland is the ancestral home of Mary. It's interesting, you know, it's interesting to me because I think it's not always clear this is the case, but the Shire and Buckland are actually two separate, I guess, principalities or whatever when you want to call them municipalities. The actual border of the Shire on the east is the Brandywine River, which means that the land to the east of the Brandywine, Buckland, is not actually technically part of the Shire.
Oh,
yeah.
How interesting.
So, which, you know, you're just like, well, hobbits live there. Why wouldn't it be? But it's not. So, So Mary is made master of the Shire and, of Buckland.
Yes.
And you've got Sam as the mayor of the Shire.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got 2 years later, Pippin becomes the Took and the Thane, right? So he becomes the Took and Thane. It's not entirely clear to me how the offices of mayor and Thane of the Shire overlap, but I think the Thane has more of a, like, you know, outward protection kind of job, whereas the mayor is like governing, you know.
Okay.
You know, governing what's inside, maybe.
And this is of the Shire.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So he and Sam would have been working pretty closely together.
Right.
Right. With Sam being reelected as mayor mm-hmm. in that same year.
Yeah. Yeah. And and then King Alesar makes the Thane, the master, and the mayor counselors of the North Kingdom. So King Alesar is basically like, I want to hang with my boys. I'm going to make them counselors of the North Kingdom, right?
So they have an excuse to come hang out with me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they're all just all having a good old time, right? Mm-hmm. They're probably all going, hanging out in the palace, the restored palaces of Arnor and doing all kinds of...
And Eleanor, you know, gets to be the maid of honor to Queen Arwen. So that's a pretty awesome job.
I'm telling y'all, this is like an extended happily ever after
it
here,
really
right?
It really is. Absolutely.
Yeah, so 1436, Fourth Age 15, King Alesar meets his friends at the Brandywine Bridge and gives the Star of the Dúnedain to Master Samwise. Eleanor, Sam's eldest, is made a maid of honor to Queen Arwen. So I searched high and low to try and figure out what the Star of the Dúnedain is. And the best I could tell, what I think it must be some kind of like award. It's almost like a Medal of Honor. Right. Like a medal of service, right? To say like, here's this honor being bestowed upon you. Mm. So I don't think it's like one thing necessarily. I found an article on the Star of Elendil. And that's more of like an actual one thing, but I have a feeling this is like some kind of award like that, right? Where it's like, you know, for your service,
so
Sam.
Kind of like a knighting, maybe?
Maybe, you know, like, you know, the Order of the Dúnedain or something like that, mm-hmm. you know.
An honorary member.
I don't know where else this would be explained, and I searched, you know, pretty thoroughly to try to find some mm-hmm. reference to it or explanation of what it was.
Well, we can just use our imaginations. I think that's what Tolkien would want us to do.
It seems like something Elessar would have done for Sam,
yeah,
right?
I would agree.
He would have, mm-hmm. you know, been like, you were the one that, you know, you and Frodo together carried the ring to its destruction. You know, you saved all of Middle Earth from Sauron's tyranny. You deserve this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right on.
Yeah. 5 years later, 1441, Sam becomes mayor a third time, right? So he's just mm-hmm. racking it up at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mayor for life.
All right.
1442, Fourth Age 21, Sam, Rose, and Eleanor ride to Gondor and stay there for a year. Tolman Cotton serves as deputy mayor. So, yeah,
like long in Sam's absence.
Yeah, so that's a pretty long visit, right?
A year.
Well, it's not only a long visit, but it's a very long journey to get there from the Shire, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about up here all the way down here, right?
Yeah.
Through the gap, I'm assuming they went through the Gap of Rohan. And yeah, that's just that is a long, long journey. But
now
at this
they didn't
point,
have to worry about any bad stuff happening.
At this point, it's not perilous because it's all part of the realms of King Alesar,
right?
Under the protection of King Alesar.
Yeah, so it would have been a very enjoyable journey.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would have made it with the, you know, I don't know. Eleanor's a little older at this point. But anyway, yeah, it seems, you know, it seems like it would be safer now to make that journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then Tolman Cotton is Rose's brother, and he serves as the deputy mayor in Sam's absence. And then 6 years after that, fourth age, 27, Sam is elected mayor for the fourth time. Eleanor marries Fastrid of Greenholm. And so Fastrid of Greenholm is...
he was a Hobbit of the Shire.
He was a Hobbit of the Shire, and... Yeah, we don't know much.
I was going to say, that's all it really says.
We don't know much else about him other than that, right? He was a part of the Fairbairn family. And there you go.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. So, sorry.
Poor guy.
Just had a weird thought. Just had a funny thought. Yeah, you don't know much about him. But it's important. But we know his name was Fastrid. Fastrid of Greenholm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he landed himself a very pretty bride.
Not Fast Blue. Not Slow Blue, but Fast Red.
Fast Red.
Yeah.
Fast Red.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who wants a fast blue car? Nobody. Everybody wants a fast red car.
That's true.
It is true.
Whoa.
I know.
Craziness.
It's like red and fast. They just go together.
But if you couldn't get a fast red car, would you be okay with a fast blue car?
If I really, really wanted a fast car?
Yeah.
Yeah, but think about it. Like a Corvette?
Yeah, but you'd
what be... What color just, Corvette
yeah,
are you going to get?
You'd be okay with it, but you'd be kind of driving around like thinking in the back of your mind like... Why can't I,
right,
why
you would have totally
red?
You would have totally felt like you settled.
Yeah,
it's like if you're gonna buy a Corvette, get a red one. If you're gonna get a Ferrari, get a red one.
Just driving around like pretending to look all cool, and in the back of your mind you're thinking, I better look ridiculous in this fast car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fast red people, go with it. Be like Eleanor and go for the fast red.
Go for the fast red.
That's right.
Yep.
Fast red. It's fast.
What were you going to say?
sorry, y'all. This just went off the rails. All right. So I was just going to say, he's Fast Red of Greenholm, right? So.
Oh. Green and red.
Yeah.
Together they make.
Christmas.
Christmas. Christmas. Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Also, the colors of Italy.
True.
Mm-hmm. Although there's... Anyway, okay.
Gonna be able to eat a lot of Italian ice.
Italian ice. Mm-hmm. Pasta. Pizza.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought of Italian ice first.
I don't even know either. It's not even Italian, I don't think. Italian ice is like gelato.
What?
Why is it even called Italian? Because the most famous brand is Luigi's. So Everybody just assumed it was Italian because it was... named after an Italian guy. I spent quite a bit of time in Italy, and I never ate Italian ice while I was there. I ate a ton of gelato, but no
That's
Italian
because
ice.
Because in Italy, they just call it ice.
But I didn't even eat any ice. All their water was tepid. Like, if you wanted something cold and frozen, you eat gelato. You don't eat frozen flavored ice.
Well, that's kind of insulting to Italian water. I'm just saying.
Hey, I enjoy myself some Italian sparkling water with the recipe. Period. Oh, that's French. Never mind. Okay. Pellegrino. Pellegrino is
just
Italian.
Just got us 1,000
right?
One-star reviews from Italy. Way to go.
Nice.
I mean, deluged.
I love Italy. I love it. Especially gelato.
Now you say it.
I really do love Italy.
We should have never started talking about Fast Red.
But aren't Ferraris Italian cars?
Boom.
See?
Yes. And they're red.
And they're red.
Fast red. It all connects back.
It all connects back. Okay.
All right.
We're moving on.
We just got so many one-star reviews off of that section. All right.
Guys, you could go back and edit it.
No.
No.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Fair enough.
Deal with it. Shades come down.
Glasses are coming down.
Yep.
Right.
All right. Shire Reckoning, 1452, 4th age, 31. West March added to the Shire. I just wrote pretty significant Western expansion. Oh yeah, okay, there we go. Sorry, I'm getting my mind back into Middle Earth here after that long tangent. So, So what is the West March? So the West March is the area to the west of the Shire, and it's a pretty large area actually.
Was it not previously inhabited?
I don't know if it was inhabited or not, but it was not part of the Shire technically, right?
It was not part of the Shire, okay.
But I believe it's this area over here, right? So the Shire is right here. And then it's this area over between the Shire and the Bay of, or the Eridluin, the the Blue Mountains, the Grey Havens over here.
Okay.
So
who gives that to them? It's a gift, right?
Yeah. It's a gift of, I mean, I assume it's a gift by the king, right? Oh. So Elessar, right?
Okay. And many hobbits move there.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently they
there's some wide open spaces.
You know, they expand in there. So, you know, I guess the number of hobbits, this is a prosperous time to be a hobbit, I guess. And so, you know, it's time to move over into some of this other land. And, you know, it's part of the rewards for the, you know, for the service they did.
Right. Yeah. To for the rest service of Frodo and Sam and Merry and Pippin. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I'm trying to find, I think it's written here where we've got what are its borders? Oh, it's between the Far Downs and the Tower Hills, right? So Western Eriador between the Far Downs and the Tower Hills. So the Tower Hills are right here, and then the Far Downs are, like, you know, right here. So, yeah, it's this section, you know, it's this section over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are the Far Downs in the part of the Shire?
No, the Far Downs are, like, right before you get to the Grey Havens. Right, on the westward journey.
Okay, and that's where Eleanor got married. So that's interesting to me that she didn't get married in the Shire.
Yeah, well.
It's just interesting.
Yeah, you know.
You'll usually expect a bride to get married in her home.
Well, I guess she wanted a, you know, an exotic wedding.
She wanted a, what are those called? Where you have to travel, a destination wedding.
Destination wedding, yeah.
Grey Havens, you know, you can't get much cooler than
I get married at the Grey Havens.
Yeah, me too.
Man.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so let's see. Next up, 1454, 4th age 33, Elfstan Fairbairn, son of Fastred and Eleanor, is born. Sam's first grandchild.
Yeah.
It appears.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the first one worth mentioning.
Right.
But it probably is his first since...
Since Eleanor is his eldest.
Is his oldest, yeah. Not that it always happens that way, but it would make sense.
Right. 1455, Sam becomes mayor for the fifth time, and then nothing much happens again until 1462 when Sam becomes mayor for the sixth time. Yeah.
He, Fastred becomes Thane of the West March that same year.
And, yeah,
in
I know.
1455.
Yeah, you told me to wait, but I hadn't even gotten to 1462 yet. No, he becomes mayor. You've got a old copy.
Oh, are we working with different years?
No, I think, yeah. So let me see yours. You have an older copy, and I think it must have been edited since then. Yeah. So 1455, all the stuff on 1455 in my edition is on 1462.
Oh, well.
Except for Sam becoming mayor for the fifth time.
Interesting.
But let's see. Let's see he was made Warden of Westmarch in 4th Age 34, which, well, here in Tolkien Gateway, it says it's 1455, but they must just not have updated. Because mine, I have the Kindle version, so it gets, you know, updated. It gets all the updates automatically,
okay.
Right?
Okay,
all right. So I think mine is more authoritative.
And, you know, we're really just dealing with a difference of 7 years, so not a big deal.
Are you saying this doesn't matter?
No, I'm just saying that the actual dates I don't think are, like, really that important. Does it really matter, like, when, if Fastred became Warden in 1455 or 1462?
So you are saying it doesn't matter.
No, I'm just saying the dates don't matter. There's 7 years difference. Grand scheme, not a big deal. MBD.
So if I'm just like, hey, didn't we get married in 2009? You're like, no big deal?
Well... But that's a marriage. This is warden stuff. It doesn't really matter.
You call yourself a Tolkien fan.
Nothing really matters.
Don't try to sing your way back into my good graces with Queen.
Okay.
I'm not even that big a Queen fan, so it's not like it would work with me. All right.
I know.
Yeah. So 1462, Sam becomes mayor for the sixth time. He would have been 82 years old in that year. So
I just want you to know we just got more 1-star reviews for you being mean to me.
Oh yeah, well.
So
we just can't help ourselves.
We're kind of like tanking it.
We should just.
I just want to just quit now.
We should just edit out this whole episode.
Hey
everybody, welcome to episode 210. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. That's going to be this episode once it's released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be our make or break episode.
Yeah.
210. Who would have thought? Okay.
Yeah. So,
he becomes mayor for the sixth time.
Yes.
In 62.
Right.
And that's also when Fast Red is made warden.
Made warden of the West March.
Okay.
Fast Red's like, took you long enough.
Took you long enough, right?
Thought you could have been a little faster.
Faster. Boom.
Boom.
Well, if you're going by my account, it would have been faster.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But unfortunately, your account's wrong.
Well, it does line up with Tolkien Gateway, so.
Well, mine is the book, and it's the authoritative latest edition.
Technological something or other.
Yes.
Okay.
Fastred and Elenor make their dwelling at Under Towers on the Tower Hills, where their descendants, the Fair Barons of the Towers, dwelt for many generations, right?
So they settle in the West March.
Yes, they do. So, yeah, this place, the Tower Hills, so again, this is the Tower Hills are the hills right before the Grey Havens on the westward journey. And this Under Towers, it's basically like they built their own little, underground hobbit hole system near the... you know, in the Tower Hills, right? So they built a big hobbit mansion in the Tower Hills, and that's what this the Under Towers was, right?
That's cool.
It was at Under Towers that Sam's daughter, Elenor Gardner, settled with Fastred of Greenholm to found the Fairbairn family, the hereditary wardens of Westmarch.
So it was just like a big family compound. Sounds like.
Yeah, sounds like it, you know.
Yeah. Cool.
Although I feel like the word compound has bad connotations.
It probably does, and I didn't mean it with any bad connotations.
It's the ancestral home.
There you go.
The newly founded ancestral home.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah, so what do we got? So
we have another marriage.
We have another marriage, 1463, Shire Reckoning, fourth age 42, Faramir took Mary's Goldilocks, daughter of Samwise.
That's cool. So, yeah. That's Sam and Pippin's
kids.
Connected by marriage. That's cool.
Yeah, Sam's daughter and Pippin's son.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Then 1469, fourth age 48, Sam is mayor for the seventh time, 89 years old now. And when the term ends for this one, he will be 96.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Those 7-year terms.
Yeah.
1482, fourth age 61, Rose dies. Sad days for Sam, but you know, she seems to have lived a nice long life, assuming she's probably about the same age as Sam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe even a little older.
Possibly. Yeah. It's possible, you know, but I think they were roughly the same age.
Yeah.
Sam rides west, last seen by Elenor at the Tower Hills, gives her the Red Book of Westmarch, and then Sam passes over the sea. So the Red Book of Westmarch is basically it's within the Legendarium. It's the accounts of the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings, right?
Okay.
So it's Bilbo's story and then Frodo's story. So and it's meant to be kind of like the books that we have within the stories themselves, and it's like kind of the internal legend of how we got these accounts, right?
Isn't there a scene in the movie of Sam reading it with?
Well, there's a scene of in the movies of like Bilbo writing it,
but I thought there was one at the end of Sam.
Well, I think you're thinking of when we talked about, because in we did an episode way back on one of the writings in the history of Middle Earth series, where it's like one of the only things, the only stories from the Fourth Age, and I think it's like the frame narrative of it is Sam talking to Elenor and telling her a story from the Red Book of Westmarch.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that is what I think that's what you're thinking of. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that book is now in Elenor's keeping.
That's correct. Okay. And then Sam passes over the sea in that year, right? So Sam is off to the west, right? Off to the Blessed Realm.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Following in Frodo's footsteps.
As one of the ring bearers, as one of the ring bearers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then 1484, 2 years after that, in fourth age 63, Merry and Pippin resign their offices to their sons, ride over the Sarn Ford southward to visit King Éomer in Rohan. And then, let's see, Holdwine is mentioned here. Let's see, where is it? Right over the Sarn Ford, and They were not seen again in the Shire. It was heard after that Mestre Meriadoc came to Edoras and was with King Éomer before he died in the autumn. Yeah, I'm not sure why I wrote... Oh. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so Holdwine was then... Oh, yeah, there we go. It's written in 1484. Éomer wished to see Master Holdwine once again, right? And so Holdwine is the name that Éomer gave to Meriadoc, right? Oh, okay. It's like the Rohirrim name, right? He gave to him, and it means faithful friend, right? So
he goes to see him one more time.
Exactly.
With
Peregrine. Yep. And then Éomer dies. Merry and Pippin go on to Gondor, and they stay what short years they have left in Gondor until they died and were laid in Rath Dinan among the great of Gondor. Yeah.
So they did not go across the Grey Havens to the Grey Havens.
No, because they didn't make the journey to the Blessed Realm because they never carried the ring.
So being part of the Fellowship didn't count.
Right.
You had to actually carry the ring.
Exactly.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to be a ring bearer in order to make the journey to, or you know, for in the case of Frodo and Sam and Bilbo, that's why they were all allowed to make that journey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and then fast forward many years, roughly 60 years into Fourth Age 120, Aragorn dies, and then Merry and Pippin are laid beside him in his tomb beside him, right? So, and then Legolas builds a ship in Ithilien, and he and Gimli set sail over the sea. So we never find out what happens to Legolas and Gimli.
Now, Legolas could have gone to the Blessed Realm, being an elf, yes?
I believe so. And so it's interesting to think about if Gimli was given passage based on his friendship with Legolas.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, but...
I
like to think he was, too. It seems fitting.
Seems
right?
Very appropriate, indeed. A good ending.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So that's the story. That's the last word we have, right, in the history of Middle Earth. That is where the story ends, but let's be optimists and ask, where could the story even go from here? And are there any loose ends that need wrapping up from there? I can't think of any big ones. But, you know, with Latron Prime happening, I want to be a little optimistic and say, could there be a storytelling future beyond the Fourth Age, right? I don't think they should go there until they can prove that they can do the stuff that's already written well.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, why not?
Yeah. Why not speculate? You know, as long as it keeps within
Want it to get too crazy, but...
Right. There needs to be boundaries.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, why not?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Why not? Why not... You know, make a, you know, speculate about Eleanor and, you know, Fast Red and...
Why not just have some, like, lesser Hobbit adventures, you know, lesser Hobbit stories?
Yeah, because all these people had descendants.
Right.
I mean, you know, they all married and had kids. Well,
couldn't you do another story that's more on the scale, you know, couldn't you do more stories that are on the scale of, like, of Bilbo's adventure? Right? You know, smaller scale kinds of things, treasure hunting, you know, kinds of adventures.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that would be awesome.
It could be fun, right? It could be
yeah,
fun.
It
just expand,
really,
you know, expand the Legendarium into some other areas. Kind of like what they're doing right now with Star Wars after, you know, finishing the sequel trilogy. You know, they're doing all these other stories that aren't really about the Skywalkers at all. They're about, you know, the big one right now is The Mandalorian. And I watched the first season of that and thought it was pretty good, and you know, I think if they can do it over there, then why couldn't they do it in Middle Earth?
So, exactly, why not?
Now there's plenty of other stories to tell that Tolkien has given us kind of an outline for, so I don't want them to get too far ahead of themselves, but I think it might be cool.
I agree.
Cool to speculate about.
Yeah,
the future is wide open. All right, so that is our discussion. That ends our discussion of the history of the Third Age, and time for a little bit of correspondence. So we have one piece we'll be looking at this week.
Okay.
And this is from Sebastian S. Sebastian writes, "Hey, John and Greta, I came across your podcast about a year ago when I was trying to encourage a friend of mine to make another attempt at the Silmarillion. She is a fan of the Lord of the Rings trilogy and of The Hobbit, but like so many of us, got too overwhelmed on her first attempt at the Silmarillion and quit. In the interest of making sure I was providing her a good resource, I started listening, beginning with Talking Tolkien Episode 1. I have now caught up to the current episode and figured I'd drop you guys a line to let you know that I appreciate the work you are doing. I think it's great that you are not only guiding listeners through Tolkien's major works, but also introducing people to the poems and letters and shorter works as well. As a Tolkien fan of nearly 30 years, I had never read Leif by Niggle until your episode on it. Just right there, that little bit makes my heart feel good that, you know, another person having read Leif by Niggle, you know, for the first time because of our podcast. That's always awesome.
That's
to
a
hear.
Win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
He goes on to say, also, I wanted to share an insight about pronunciation. Dun, dun, dun. So I attached a picture and a voice recording. Let's see here. So diphthong. I'm never sure if I should pronounce this. It's diphthong. Diphthong pronunciation. In Quenya, U-I-O-I-A-I and I-U-E-U-A-U are diphthongs. That is pronounced in one syllable. All other pairs of vowels are disyllabic. This is often dictated by writing with the umlaut over the A, E, and A-A, or over the A and A-A, A-O, or O-E. In Sindarin, the diphthongs are written A-E, A-I, E-I, O-E, U-I, and A-U. Other combinations are not diphthongal. The writing of final A-U as A-W is in accordance with English custom, but is actually not uncommon in Feanorian spellings. So, yeah, so, and I don't even know if I get this stuff right. It's so hard to keep track of it all,
it
right?
Is, yeah.
And I do my best, and I think I've figured out, I know I started out saying a lot of stuff incorrectly. I hope I've corrected it to the right places, but I know I still have a long way to go on all this stuff. So my word to Sebastian and to everybody else is, if I'm still saying things wrong, let me know. I do my best.
What is the voice recording?
You know, I don't have the audio hooked up for the computer, so I can't do that. But let's see here. I can probably swing that real quick.
Oh, I didn't not mean to complicate things, but I was just curious.
Well, you did.
Well, there you go, being mean to me again.
Sorry.
Maybe you're just saying it like it is. So I do complicate things.
Hey, John and Greta, I just want to give you guys a little voice message to provide some insight that
message.
I found in terms of pronunciation, specifically about diphthongs in Quenya and Sindarin. And I'm by no means a Tolkien pronunciation expert, but and I love it if I'm incorrect that other listeners would correct me. But when I look through the appendix E of Return of the King, there's a section that speak specifically about the elven languages and which vowel combinations are diphthongs that are pronounced as one syllable and other pairs of vowels that are disyllabic, which means that you would pronounce each vowel independently. And usually what Tolkien would do is he'd write specifically over the E's, he'd write the diéresis, the two little dots look like a German umlaut. And he identifies the fact that the EA, the EO, and the OE combinations are disyllabic, meaning each one of those vowels should be pronounced. So specifically this comes up because every time I hear you guys talk about Yarendel the Mariner, in my own mind and based on this, my pronunciation would have been something more like Eärendil, with the Ea, the same way that you pronounce the name of the world of creation, Ea. The E and the A sound should not be lumped together based on what I'm reading here. So again, if someone else has better insight into this and can correct me, I'd love to know that I've been doing it wrong. But from what I see in the appendices, Eärendil is what I would consider correct. Thanks, and you guys keep up the good work.
Awesome. Thanks, Sebastian.
Yes, thank you.
So, you know, I've gone back and forth over time on Eärendil, and I feel like if I was living in Middle Earth, I would just get lazy about saying his name and say it like, and basically it would just become almost like a Y sound, right? Like Yarendil, right? Eärendil, Yarendil, 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 right? You say it more quickly and quickly and quickly, and you're speaking more quickly. You just become lazier in how you say things. And so maybe it's just a sense of familiarity with the name. It's become Yarindil for me, but you're probably right, honestly. But I've had just different times where I've said it in different ways. I know there are times I would say it Eyarindil, but I don't know. Something just feels long, like too long about that for me. I don't know.
Well, you just shouldn't be hasty.
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. Perfect rebuke. All right. Well, Sebastian's got a little more here. As a side note, as much as listeners love Greta, I find myself to be more of a kindred spirit with John. I believe we are close to the same age, and our August birthdays are pretty close too. So I'm the exact right demographic for the 80s and 90s movie references constantly being dropped. I'm also a musician-songwriter, so the pop culture song references are also super in my wheelhouse. And I have an English degree, so I really latch on to the scholarly aspect of the discussions. Not to say that Greta doesn't add to the show, she does, but as most of the praise seems to go her way, I just thought I'd throw a little appreciation towards John.
Aww.
Rock on.
That's nice. You do too. You have a lot in common.
It's about time someone appreciated me. You guys wouldn't even know who Greta was if it wasn't for me.
It's true. Man. I owe everything to you, John. Nope. You have made me the podcaster I am today.
The queen of podcastingdom.
That is kind of crazy, though. All the ways that you're, you know, all the things that you and Sebastian have in common. It's cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah,
most definitely. It's so awesome to hear from you, Sebastian. Mm-hmm. You know, thank you so much for sharing those pronunciations and the quest for pronunciation perfection in Tolkien and things Tolkien goes on.
It's a never ending journey.
But that was a very helpful note. For sure. Yeah. And I am going to be more deliberate about saying Eärendil until someone corrects me in the future.
Eärendil.
Eärendil.
Eärendil. Yeah, that was a really good story. I liked that one.
Absolutely. All right. He says, be well, Sebastian S.
Cool.
He says,
beans.
P.S. I thought you might find these links interesting. Tolkien himself reading from The Hobbit and singing the poem Namarie in Quenya.
Oh.
So I'm going to link to those in the show notes.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Good plan.
So.
Yeah.
All right. I think that about wraps it up for this episode, Greta.
Sweet.
If you'd like to correspond with us, email us, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, website, Facebook, Twitter, etc. Our next episode, we'll be discussing the history of the White Tree of Gondor.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds great.
Pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
We'd like to thank our patrons, as always, especially the following: Shannon S.,
Brian O.,
Emilio P.,
Zeke F.,
James A.,
James L.,
Chris L.,
Chuck F.,
Azia V.,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C.,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D.,
Eric S.,
Joey S.,
Eric B.,
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Matt L.,
Johanna T.,
Todd G.,
and Ms. Anonymous.
You guys are the best.
You guys are.
All of our patrons are amazing.
You guys rocketh.
Yes.
Indeed rock.
Totally.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.